This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes on a very pleasant April 25th, 2017. My name is Arvind Yuvaraj and I've got Angeline Tay in the studio with me today. It feels like a Monday, but it's not a Monday. It's already a Tuesday with just 3.5 working days to go before the long, long weekend. It feels like a bonus. It feels like we completely skipped Monday and
yeah.
we went like, all the Monday blue stuff.
Exactly.
And all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because right. you come back here with a I guess, positive view that mm-hmm. this week is short. I don't have to work so long.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm beginning to get used to these 3 days weekends as well. And speaking of long weekends, something has grown bigger and longer starting this week, and I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, and for all those listening, get your mind out of the gutter. We're actually talking about our show. Due to popular demand, Enterprise Biz Bytes will now be an hour long. So more stories, more news, and more of us, rambling about entrepreneurship, tech, personal growth, and, you know, all things enterprise-y.
Mm-hmm. And let's get straight into our first story. Story number one is about Malaysian company acquiring mobile image editing tool Pixlr.
Yeah, so what a way to start the week with this news, right? 1-3RF is a Malaysian stock photo startup announced today that they have acquired mobile image editor startup Pixlr, or P-I-X-L-R. They didn't disclose the terms of the transaction, but it will help the parent company, which is Imagine Group, to create a holistic creative ecosystem that makes great design accessible for everyone to all.
Yeah, so Imagine Group is actually looking to secure 50 million monthly active users through this acquisition, as Pixlr is said to have secured over 100 million installs of mobile apps. But this move is actually in a bid to beef up its portfolio before a scheduled year-end listing. Did you know 123RF is actually headquartered in Chicago, although it's mainly run out here in Malaysia?
Yeah, which is super impressive already. So Pixlr, on the other hand, is a cloud and mobile photo editor that was founded in Sweden, but they were acquired by Autodesk in 2011. And now 123RF snapped up this company as well. This acquisition follows the purchase of a UK-registered online design marketplace, the Hungry JPEG, last month by the same Imagine Group.
Yeah, and since acquiring Pixlr, now we're focusing on Autodesk, right? Mm-hmm. Autodesk has invested in expanding the portfolio and bringing powerful editing tools to millions of users around the world. And in the process, growing the user base by 20-fold. And you might wonder, why did Autodesk let Pixlr go? And that's because Autodesk is now part of an ongoing business model transition, and they have decided to focus development resources on just their core product portfolio.
Yeah, and meanwhile, this acquisition propels Imagine Group's unique monthly active users towards the 50 million mark.
Yeah.
123RF in-house production team of over 200 will begin working to expand the Pixlr content library as a value add-on to its users, ensuring Pixlr communities will continue to have access to new tools and content.
And the great thing about this is that it's free. And I think all designers are really happy for free stuff.
Yeah.
And also, Imagine's engineers, that they are already integrating Pixlr's platform, and we should see some level of integration in Q3 this year. And we'll wait for more announcements from Imagine Group, because they are looking to list 123RF by end of this year. While until recently, they were looking for an ASX, which is an Australian stock exchange, listing at valuation of over $220 million. But they are now reported that considering at other stock exchanges in developed markets like Hong Kong, US, Japan, Singapore, or even London.
Yeah, and Pixlr is a good app. I used it for a while before I switched to something else, and it has a lot of functions that lets you edit your photos and stuff. So pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Speaking of growth, let's talk about Netflix for our second story of the day. Netflix is going through an insane growing stage, and obviously the process also comes with some growing pains and ups and downs. Even though the company has been very successful as the top streaming service worldwide, Netflix still wants to borrow about $1 billion to pay for all the, you know, the original movies and TV shows, you know, that it wants to offer in its expanding catalog.
Yeah, we even covered last week that Netflix wasn't too happy with their subscriber numbers for Q1 of 2017, and now they're planning to raise a crazy $1 billion $1 to fund their upcoming offerings. And you have to wonder if this is a hint of some shaky times for Netflix.
Yeah, but to be honest, I don't think so. If you just read the headline, like Netflix borrows $1 billion, it sounds dramatic. It's a sexy headline. Mm. But if you look at this from like a bird's eye point of view, it actually makes sense for Netflix. I think they have a good strategy in place and they're willing to spend more cash to grow and even, you know, before they can make all that money back in the long run, right? Mm. So Netflix isn't looking at the short-term goal. They're more about the big picture and the long game. And I think $1 billion is a small amount compared to, you know, like compared to what Netflix can make back in like the long-term process.
Yeah, and also the company says it will raise 1 billion euros. So that's equivalent to $1.08 billion via a debt offering to fund its original content ambitions. And I think you're right with that logic because Netflix themselves admitted that they would minus the dollar amount last week when it announced its Q1 earnings. Right now, Netflix is a very large cash-burning machine. Mm-hmm. And they've even said that they will have $2 billion in negative cash flow this year. That's still a big number.
Yeah, it's a huge number. But if you look at what Netflix is doing, it's actually like, it's pretty incredible stuff. First of all, they've started to purchase big movies that would normally end up in the cinemas and that would take like months and months before a streaming service could even offer them. But Netflix has bought the rights and will screen these movies as Netflix exclusives and originals. You have a Will Smith and Joel Edgerton movie coming out called Bright that's out this December. Our At The Movies page actually released like a bunch of first look photos for this movie about a month ago. And then you have a Brad Pitt movie coming out called War Machine, and that's and there's even a Martin Scorsese movie coming out with Al Pacino and Robert De Niro starring in like the big roles. And this doesn't even include all their big shows like House of Cards and Stranger Things and 13 Reasons Why.
So basically they've become a giant production studio and not just a streaming service.
Yeah, exactly. So they're trying to pull out like all these massive Hollywood names on their catalogue so that it attracts like the cinema going crowd, because there's still a big, like a giant untapped market that doesn't believe in like quote unquote originals and made for streaming movies. They want to see like names they recognize, like Will Smith or Angelina Jolie or Christian Bale or Brad Pitt on the poster, right? And even in like the synopsis. So Netflix is giving them like those names. And obviously those names are not cheap.
Yeah.
And you know, then they're also trying to up their production value on their all their shows. So all this needs money. And if you look at, you know, if you look at what they're doing from that angle, then $1 billion isn't really that much.
Yeah, I guess because you have to afford Angelina Jolie, Brad Pitt, yeah. Will Smith, right?
Yeah.
With the kind of money movies use nowadays as a production budget, I think $1 billion is pretty decent asking price. Mm-hmm. Coming back to the long game, Netflix is supposed to have enough paying customers in the next few years to afford all that content and turn a profit. And right now, things are looking good for Netflix because shares are up 15% this year and it has more than 94 million subscribers around the world. And that number will only keep growing as more and more people opt for on-demand services instead of traditional television.
Yeah, there's actually a 55% drop from the number of people who actually want to watch traditional TV as compared to last year, according to a big survey. We're going to talk about that when we come back, about how TV is losing out to things like Netflix and all the other streaming services. All that is coming up after the break, so don't go anywhere. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9.
Bureaucratic failures multiply. BFM 89.9.
You're still listening to Angie and Arvin on Enterprise Biz Bytes. Before the break, we covered a story on Netflix wanting to borrow $1 billion to pay for new shows and more production value, and also movies starring Hollywood giants like Brad Pitt and Will Smith. And Netflix can afford to do all this because they know that they can pay for it back when they keep gaining more members, and because streaming is the way of the future. And they're not wrong, because according to an Accenture survey, only 23% of people globally prefer watching TV on an actual TV set, which is about 55% decrease from last year.
Gee, 55%, huh?
Yeah.
And they also mentioned that more than 40% of TV viewers opted for a laptop or desktop computer instead. And that's actually how I watch most of my movies and TV. It's fast, it's mobile, I can watch it wherever I want. So why would I want to go back to watching regular TV?
Yeah, I know, but I actually love watching basic TV because there's a charm to it, and then you get like you have a bigger screen, and then you have better sound if you have some decent speakers. But even I haven't seen like a full program on my like TV for at least about 5 months. And before that was at least a year. I think the last was Christmas when I was like in that holiday mood. I was lazing on the couch. And then I decided to subscribe for something like Finding Dory or I can't remember what the other one was. And even then it wasn't showing on any of the normal channels. I actually had to pay for like an on-demand fee.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to watch those normal TV, we grew up watching it, but yeah. I think I've stopped watching TV since after I left, you know, high school.
Mm-hmm,
so that's a long time. So even then you opted for on-demand and didn't bother about waiting for it to play according to the schedule.
Yeah, I didn't.
Right? There's another survey by GFK suggested that people without cable or satellite subscriptions preferred shows from streaming platforms as opposed to traditional TV networks. So these new surveys published on Monday hint that the dramatically changing habits of TV watchers and also highlight the challenges faced by traditional broadcasters.
Yeah. But the problem, I think, is with the number of people that they surveyed, which is actually super small. Mm. The Accenture 2017 Digital Consumer Survey involved about 26,000 people from 26 countries and showed only 23% of viewers preferred watching programming on a television set. And then last year, 52% of people worldwide and 59% in the US said that their number one choice was to watch TV on a TV set. But if you take 26,000 people across 26 countries, that's an average of about 1,000 people per country, which is a tiny number to represent like the whole nation.
Yeah, like where were they from? You know, were these people urbanites or from rural areas? Were these people in the working class or students? Were they slightly older or millennials or teenagers? I guess, you know, you can't split 1,000 people into all these categories and come to a solid conclusion. It barely means anything.
Yeah, exactly. And if the shift is real, then it means that traditional advertising models may be upended because live television typically makes up the majority of TV ad inventory. But then if you look at this last Super Bowl that just, I think, a couple of months ago, companies and movie studios were paying about $5 million for 30 seconds of airtime. Yeah, so no one in their right mind would spend that kind of cash if only 23% of people were actually watching TV. So the numbers don't, like, they don't match. They don't kind of compute.
Mm. Yeah, I guess they were just, you know, looking at people's preference and not exactly people's habit today, right? And streaming still has its downsides, which is why, you know, it isn't able to capture advertisers the way TV is. Although I personally would opt for streaming service over traditional TV any day. So according to Accenture, the dominance of the TV set as the undisputed go-to entertainment device is ending. And while a great number of people still watch plenty of TV shows on TV sets, their research actually uncovers a rapid acceleration in their preference for viewing on the other digital devices, especially laptops, desktops, and smartphones.
Yeah, it sounds super dramatic, but I personally think that this should be taken with like a grain of salt. Yes, TV is fading and on-demand and streaming is the future, but these numbers are a bit too drastic to represent like an entire population of, you know, like any country, let alone like the whole world.
Yeah, coming back to the survey released by the market research group GFK on Monday, people who watch video without a cable or satellite TV subscription prefer shows from streaming providers instead of from traditional TV, and this could place further pressure on networks and advertisers already struggling with consumers' shifting habits. This survey is slightly more niche-based because GFK surveyed, 10,000 US cord cutters, which are people who cancelled their cable or satellite subscriptions, and cord nevers, which are people who never had a subscription in the first place. It showed that they preferred streaming network programming over broadcast or cable TV, and the top 10 shows of both types came from Netflix, Hulu, or Amazon, with Netflix, Orange is the New Black taking the top honor.
Yeah, I like that term, like cord nevers. So no subscription, and cord cutters.
So I
have no doubt that the quality of shows, you know, that on streaming services will eventually pull the majority of people to their service. Like most of my favorite shows are on Netflix, except for Legion, which is on FX, and The Walking Dead, which is on AMC, and those are cable networks. Otherwise, everything else is on Netflix, so I don't doubt the logic behind the survey. I just think that the numbers are like way too small to represent like a worldwide population. Anyway, if you're an employer and you know, you might wanna stick around for our next story because it covers stupid, yes, stupid office rules that chase away really good employees. That's up next, BFM 89.9.
Bending fickle minds, BFM 89.9.
You're still listening to Enterprise Biz Bites with Angeline and Arvin. If you're wondering where the Breakfast Grill replay has gone, don't fret. Enterprise Biz Bites is now an hour long, so the grill replay will start just after the 1 p.m. news. Until then, you can enjoy our beautiful voices telling you everything you need to know about the SME world and beyond.
There. We just need to put on a very beautiful voice. Yeah. So anyway, our next story is actually about the office and some of the things that really put some employees off. We came across this article on the Vulcan Post about 10 stupid office rules that chase away good employees. Mm-hmm. And we thought that we'd share it with you so you as an employee know you're not alone. And as an employer, you can rethink those rules to create a more desirable workplace and more engaged staff.
Yeah, so let's start with rule number one, according to the Vulcan Post, that makes good people, employees and humans go running. Number one is stupid attendance policies. So companies should realize that salaried people are no longer school children. So if an employer is unhappy that an employee comes in 20 minutes late but fails to appreciate how the employee works 2 hours over time, then the company probably doesn't deserve that employee at all. Ouch.
Yeah. And the second is stupid approvals for everything. Mm. Bureaucracy can be the death of everyone. So if employees need their manager's written approval just to ask admin for a new notepad, please.
Yeah, come right? on.
Excuse me while I go bang my head against the wall. A company should choose to trust the employees they hired enough for them to make trivial decisions like this one.
Yeah, and next up is stupid hiring processes. Ever wondered how someone with less qualifications than you ended up getting a position above yours? This could probably be because the company is screening resumes by means of a keyword search as opposed to, you know, going through applicants one by one. So we're advocates of humanizing the hiring process so that the right people are hired for the correct position. And then up next, stupid internet restrictions. We're not saying that blocking NSFW, that is not safe for work sites or you know, at work, is wrong. But unfortunately, many companies restrict employees' internet activities so unnecessarily that it limits their ability to do their jobs. A classic example will be limiting YouTube to the point that people are unable to learn what they need from, you know, those how to clone tool Photoshop online tutorial videos, right?
Yep, and number four is stupid internet restrictions. Wait, you covered that. Sorry. Yeah. Number five is stupid rules on frequent flyer miles. When employees fly for work trips, they have definitely earned their frequent flyer miles. Traveling is a sacrifice of time and energy. The very least they should get is the miles earned. Companies who do not allow employees to keep their miles points for personal use are only encouraging a resentment with every flight. And number six is stupid mobile phone restrictions. Mm. Of course, organizations need to set a limit to phone use so that it doesn't hinder productivity. However, employees spend most of their waking hours at work. Yet, you know, some organizations ban the use of mobile phones at work. I mean, this step disconnects employees with their loved ones or friends. And, you know, it will definitely bite back at companies due to employees' lack of social life, which is crucial for their mental health and happiness.
Yeah, and even the internet thing, like, don't block Facebook, because if you block it on the PC, they're only going to use it on their phones.
Phone. Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, it's pointless. Number seven, according to the Vulcan Post, is stupid rules for performance reviews. There are instances when a bureaucratic 5-point scale just doesn't add up for brilliant and talented people. Bell curve performance reviews, for example, encourage the retention of mediocre employees and not those who actually outperform. However, the largest abomination of performance reviews has to be stack ranking, where the company lines up employees and compares them with each other. And here, you know, and here we thought the Hunger Games was just fiction, right? Mm. But it actually happens every day in some companies.
Yep. And number eight is stupid pay structures. Mm. Companies should realize that rigid salaries are a thing of the past. If an employee is contributing massively to the company, the managers and HR should revise the employee's benefits to show appreciation. Yep. However, you know, if the HR comes back by saying you're getting the normal 5% increase in your annual salary, that's what all of us get.
Yeah.
Yeah, then there would be no surprises if the company turnover rate skyrockets.
Yeah, and then the second last one is stupid rules for time off. So let's say a dedicated employee works hard, clocks overtime, and produces excellent results. The least the company can do is allow him or her to take, you know, their toy leave, like an annual leave, at any time they need, you know, that time off, right? Employers who scrooge on well-deserved toy leaves or even medical leave are downright unfair and deserve to see good employees leaving for better better companies.
And lastly is too many stupid rules in the first place. To be completely honest, how many of us actually do read the employee's handbook, if it even exists or is updated anyway?
Yeah, some of it was like done in 1997 or something.
So if HR expects you to completely memorize the entire thing, they should have gotten rid of, you know, at least half of those rules in that 75-page handbook in the first place. Getting people to follow your policies should be a day-to-day thing incorporated to the company culture. Mm-hmm. And nobody likes, you know, words without action framed in a handbook, you know, that it's just too long, didn't read.
Yeah, just TLDR, right? And I'll just make like a quick video and summarize the whole thing, put it in there, let people watch it. Or an online like copy or something, soft copy. Companies should realize that offices should be run where the inhabitants are mature enough to do what they were hired to do. Like not run like some concentration camp or prison with 7 levels of security, complete with feverish paranoia. Like if you're doing this, then you're running the company wrong, basically. That's what the Vulcan Post is saying. And if the 10 rules we just mentioned really sound like the company you are in right now, yeah, you know, yeah, we feel your pain and we know, so we want to make you a friend. You should really be working for a company like BFM. Hint, hint, wink, wink. Go check out our careers page at bfm.my/careers. We promise you no stupid office rules here.
Yep, and we're taking another break right now. But when we come back, another apparel retailer is closing shop. What's going on in the retail sector?
Yeah,
you know, and who's the latest to fall victim? That's up next. Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9.
Business, finance, and music. BFM 89.9.
You're still with Angie and Arvin on Enterprise Biz Bytes. As promised, our next story is about struggling apparel retailer BB Stores, which confirmed over the weekend that it would close all its stores by the end of May.
Yeah, and this is barely a month after BB announced it was exploring strategic alternatives following 4 years of losses. The company also plans to liquidate all merchandise and fixtures within the stores.
Yeah, so how do you say? Is it BB or Bebe or... I think it's, I call it Beeb.
Beeb? Because it's what's spelled as B-E-B-E?
Yeah.
Beeb. I would think it's B-B.
Yeah, because meme is M-E-M-E. So it's not meme, it's meme. So I call it Beeb.
I don't know. We'll just call it BB for
okay.
now.
Beeb sounds too much like Bieber, so...
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, so let's Bebe. Okay, yeah. Or BB. coming back to the story, we were actually watching BB closely because Bloomberg reported last month that the company was planning to shut down stores and seek a turnaround as an online brand to avoid filing for bankruptcy.
Yeah, a number of apparel retailers have already gone bankrupt in the last couple of years, including Aeropostale and The Limited due to a lackluster demand as they battled stiff competition with Amazon.com and fast fashion retailers such as H&M and Zara. And like we've been saying for a few months now on Enterprise Biz Bytes, online shopping is so big now that these brick and mortar chains are really feeling the pinch. Hey, you know, didn't we talk about how even people in villages in India were buying branded goods online now?
Yeah.
All this is really hurting sales at your traditional retail stores.
Yeah, and I mean, people think that urbanites use online shopping more, but it's actually the other way around. Like when we did the couple of interviews, it's actually people in the rural areas that use online shopping because they don't have access to the malls and, you
the
know,
brands.
Like actually, yeah, the brands. So, you know, they get their stuff online now. BB expects to recognize an impairment charge of about $20 million from the store closures, which will be recorded in the third and fourth quarters. Just so you know, the Brisbane, California-based retailer, which is known for its form-fitting dresses, had 180 stores at the end of 2016. They will all be gone by the end of next month. This is like a super sad story.
It is, yeah. And the company did not say what... its future plans were, but we'll be keeping tabs on what happens, just, you know, to keep tuned to Enterprise Biz Bytes.
Yeah, and if you too are already feeling the effects of a slowdown in the retail segment of your business, we may have a solution for you. BFM is organizing our first retail conference called Enterprise Rocks, that's short for Retail Outlets, Commerce, Kiosks and Shopping. We'll be bringing in speakers like Hans-Peter Ressel from Lazada, Lisette Shears from Nala Designs, Hugh from Pestle and Mortar, and Christy Ng among, you know, others. We have a lot of big names for this event. All these folks managed to balance both their online and offline presence to thrive in the retail scene. So we will dive into how they, you know, tapped into the Malaysian market and built loyalty with their customers.
Yeah, and even Nicholas McLaren from DKSH will be joining us. And the reason why we have DKSH for this event, that's because they have a very expanded network within the retail distribution space. So brands like Tiger Balm, you know, these old school brands.
Yeah.
And you can see Tiger Balm everywhere. Mm-hmm. Even Old Town White Coffee package, you know, when people buy sachets of Old Town White Coffee. Mm-hmm. DKSH, actually, they are the one who helped them to distribute it, and they have direct access to the retailers. They even have warehouses all over the country, both in Peninsula and Sabah, Sarawak. So I think it'll be great insight to both online and physical retailers to learn how DKSH actually run, you know, this distribution.
Yeah. And like I said, we have like many more speakers lined up, but we don't want to give away too much just yet, you know, keep the suspense. All I can say is you don't want to miss out. All this is happening on the 15th of May at Nexus Convention Center, Bangsa South. We actually have an early bird ticket promotion at the moment. So it's buy one, free one for 189 ringgit. Just head on over to bfm.my/rocks to find out more.
And next event on the list is the Effed Up Nights KL season finale, focusing on community builders such as Wuhan from Level Up KL, who was one of the first community leaders in the tech space here in KL. They also have Zikri Khalil from Incitement, who the Incitement is now a worldwide phenomenon, but it all started with a small meetup at Bangsar, and today they are in 43 countries. And lastly, they're featuring Lizzie Oliveira. We all know her. She's been on BFM. She's a community builder for Startup Grind KL. So check out the Effed Up Nights KL on PTIX and join this season finale. It's happening this Thursday, 7:30 p.m. to 10 p.m. And yes, it's free.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for Wuhan segment, actually. So that'll be pretty cool to see. If you're not into community building but would want to know what's hot in the fintech scene, this one's for you. It's happening in the same evening as F Up Nights, so it kind of clashes. This Thursday at Common Ground, it's the 10X sessions on fintech. They are diving deep into what really defines fintech and blockchain technology. Blockchain is like a hot thing now, like everyone's talking about it. The speakers for the evening are Johnny Mayo from Kern Ventures, who led the role in developing the fintech agenda across Southeast Asia. Kyrie Andriu, co-founder of Atta Plus, and also Iskandar Ezahuddin, country director of GoBear Malaysia. Tickets are priced at 20 ringgit. Check out more at ptix.com. That's all the time that we have on this new extended version of BizBytes. Up next at 1 p.m, we have the Breakfast Grill replay. Professor Barry I. Ken Green, professor of economics and political science at University of California, was in conversation with Sharad Kutan, and they talked about if there's coherence in Trump's policies from trade to deregulation.
Yep. Yeah, and that's all we have for Enterprise BizBytes. If you missed out what we covered just on the show today, we'll be posting up links to the articles on our podcast page. Just look for Enterprise BizBytes on the BFM app, and thank you for listening. Together with...
Yeah, this is Arvind Yuvaraj, and for Angeline Tay, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.